Hi, and welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and video show which brings you leadership lessons of role models sharing their leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. If you're new to the channel, please subscribe so you won't miss a new episode. I'm your host, Fritz Bussemaker, and today I'm delighted to have a conversation with Klaus Rastedt. Klaus, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Now, Klaus and I, our paths crossed, but we're going to speak at an event in London, February 24. And so when I looked up who I'm going to be on the panel with, the first thing which I noticed, you present yourself as an overpaid rock star consultant. That, okay, yeah, you're very much acknowledging that. So that's definitely one thing we're going to talk about, where you consult on the culture of innovation culture. I also want to cover the fact that you've been the chair of the Role Playing Factory for quite a number of years, and maybe even discuss the fact that you are part of a reality TV program, and you're also known as the king of the Danish LARP.
I was.
You was.
Well, I was.
You
I used to be.
You used to be. Well, I do want to cover what LARPing is for the people who are not familiar with LARPing, because when I had a look at that, that's fascinating. But first of all, I also noticed in the background, I was talking to somebody the other day, you don't like to prepare. You want to throw yourself in the deep end. Is that correct?
That is very correct. Usually when interviewers send me questions, I say I'm not going to read them.
Good. Okay. Well, I just threw out all my questions I had, so we're just going to wing it today. But maybe
I love that.
Yeah, and what's the benefits of taking that approach?
So one thing is it saves time. Very, very simple. Think of how many, this is for all of you out there. I don't care what you do. Think of all the meetings you're in that are pre-meetings. Oh, we're now going to this meeting. Let's see what we talk about. When you do interviews, for example, people want to, they basically want to do the interview before they do the interview.
Yeah.
So number one, it saves time and it makes it more fun to be there because there's a freshness. Number two, I feel there's an energy when you answer something the first time, right? When you can rehearse, yes, but that's a different thing. That's a performance. If somebody asks you a question and says, Peter, what do you think about my new painting? And then people say, oh, well, I don't know. I like the color. I like the sky. And then you say, Peter, what do you think about my painting? Answer number two is almost certain to be less energetic unless Peter is a talented performer who's used to this sort of thing. Movie stars, they whip it out and they can seem 110% go on the 28th take. The rest of us, we're better on the first one.
Okay. Is there any prerequisite or a mindset you have to adopt to be able to take that approach?
I love that question. It's rare I get that. And yes, there is. You need to trust the other person's not out to get you. Because if I'm a politician and I'm interviewed on national news about an ongoing scandal, I'd like to see the questions beforehand. Because if they're like, but tell me about how this ties into, and then you're in the deep end. Because there you're there to defend, right? But if you're not there to defend, if you don't think the other person's going to attack you, then don't prepare. Get the energy of being in the moment. But it does require that mindset of trust. And often we're in positions of trust, but we don't necessarily have the mindset of trust. I try to trust a lot of people, right? I don't know, before this interview, I don't know what you've cooked up of interesting thoughts you found and said, aha, Klaus, but here is this.
Yeah.
Why is that? I said, I don't want to talk about that. Why didn't you warn me? Well, you miss that part. So if you're defensive, if you think people are out to get you, prepare. Make sure you know. But if you trust people, and if you're in situations where you feel you can trust the other people, then my advice would be stop the preparations, start the trust.
Okay, Klaus, you're preaching to the converted, by the way, because I very much like that mindset. But before we continue, I want to backtrack a little bit. Because you, as mentioned in the opening, you speak about innovation culture. How did that happen? What background do you have? What experience do you have which allows you to consult and speak about innovation culture?
So there are several answers to that question. There's the very short one, which is that for my entire adult life, I've been involved in innovation and I've been involved in working on culture and behavior. And that means that everything I've done whether it's my current career or my previous one in the role-playing space, has always been about innovating and about trying out new things and experimentation and pushing the envelope. And a lot of that work has not been related to technology, but has been related to culture and to the human side of things. So the easy answer is to say, that's what I've done for all of my life in all of my pursuits. Now it's just what I also say I'm doing.
Okay.
The more complex answer is that role-playing, which is my past, is very good for learning about culture. It's very good for designing culture. And when you're constantly doing something new, well, there's another word for that, which is innovation.
Okay. Interesting. So, actually, I was triggered. If I remember, you mentioned, okay, for all my professional life, but reading up on your background, you started playing Dungeons and Dragons.
That is true.
Okay, well, that involved of being recognized as the king of the Danish LARP, which we'll cover a little bit later. But for me, it seems that personal life, professional life is much more blurred and mixed and not as separated as with a lot of people. But in your case, it's almost a continuum, or it is a continuum.
Extremely blurred. And well, let me say, it used to be extremely blurred. Now it's much less. Now I have a very, very normal personal life. I have a girlfriend I live with who's in the other room. We have a 5-year-old daughter. We go on vacations. We visit family. We watch Netflix, right? That's rather normal. But in my past, for many years, I had, for example, an open marriage. So my ex-wife and I had an open marriage. And that is pretty much an innovation when it comes to relationship ways. And I was living what my what blah, blah, blah. The work I did was related to role-playing, which started as a hobby and then turned into my career. And there were plenty of things that I did that were passion driven, and then sometimes there was a bit of money, sometimes not, but it was rarely that that drove it. And the nice thing about it is living with some doing something you're passionate about, is that you get up in the morning whether somebody's paying or not, which is a really nice feeling. Now, the tricky thing is that sometimes when you get up and do the work, not because of the money, you're not necessarily good at remembering the money. And that meant that for many years, I did just as much nonprofit work as I did for-profit work, which was great. But I might have, looking back, I might have been a bit better at realizing it's nice to pay rent sometimes.
Okay, yeah, so the lesson learned there for those viewers out there is on one hand, follow your passion, but you still have to pay the rent.
I will actually quote an old friend, sadly now passed away, he was 30 years older than me, and we had a conversation many years ago that's very, very sharp in my memory, Steen. And Steen said, when Steen was a young man, he said he had three major passions. He was passionate about medicine, he was passionate about skiing, and he was passionate about rock climbing. And he thought that either of these he might be able to turn into a career if he really put his back into it and did something and was lucky. And then he realized that if he was really passionate, really managed to make a career out of rock climbing, he might just be able to live by doing that. If he was really passionate, really dedicated, he might be able to live as a skiing instructor or something like that. But if he became a doctor, he could pay for the other two interests.
Good point. And by the way, being a rock climber or a skiing when you live in Denmark, you're from Denmark, that
You
actually
need to
is
go
a challenge.
somewhere else,
Yeah,
yes.
that's a challenge. Yeah. I mean, I do both and I live in the Netherlands and it is a challenge.
Tricky, right? Tricky. It's good that it doesn't have to pay the rent as well.
True. Now, because I really found that fascinating, I'll leave it up to you. Do you want to discuss the role playing factor
Yes,
or
happily,
about that?
happily.
Yes. What is that all about? What is the objective of the role playing factory?
So very simply put, role-playing or live-action role-playing, which I have a major past in, which used to be my career, my passion, my life, everything, is pretend play. It's children playing, let's pretend. Let's pretend I'm a doctor, and or let's pretend we're pirates, or let's pretend we're orcs. The difference between pretend play for kids and role playing as a hobby is that role playing is more organized, it's usually bigger events, and we tend to have better costumes and stories. So 200 people in a forest, or 50 people pretending to be lawyers in the 1950s, or spaceship drama. It could be anything. Just like you can have books about anything, you can have role playing about anything. And that used to be my passion and my profession for many, many years until In 2019, the company that I'd spent 15 years building, which was the largest live-action role-play studio in the world, I managed to crash because building it was based more on passion and less on profit, and certainly not on professionalism. And at some point, that came tumbling down. There were no more strings to pull. There were no more favors to call in, and it ended up crashing and left me with a personal debt of nearly 1 million euros. That was 2019. So role playing used to be my identity, my passion, but it means that's for the last 5 years, it's been something that I'm still passionate about. I'll never stop being an advocate for it as a form, but it's no longer my profession.
Okay. Now, I mean, experiencing that is a major milestone, I would assume, almost in anybody's life.
Yes.
Do you see that as a milestone? Yeah. Okay. Is it a negative milestone? Is it a milestone? Do you also remember, or do you see sorry, positive milestones?
Oh, plenty. But I think more than that, I think we all stumble into things that are not good. And sometimes we cause them. I was very much the cause of this, right? I'm not going to blame anybody else. This was my decisions that led us there, and I ended up paying for it. But when you look at these things, there's almost always more good in them that is apparent. I'd never learned how to make money if it wasn't for that crash. I'd never learned that if you have big enough problems, some of the small ones stop being problems if it wasn't for that crash. And one of the things that kind of I advocate, and here if we're talking like brand value and brand presence and that sort of thing, is that if you take, instead of trying to hide the bad stuff that happens, lean into it and make it part of your brand. For me, it's one of the first things people learn about me when they meet me is that I used to be this guy. I used to be one of the leading pioneers in the world within a field. And then I crashed that company and ended up in insane debt. And now I'm working to get out of that debt.
Okay.
That's part of my brand. It's part of the crash is part of the Klaus Wostler brand because it's very much part of my life. Yes, I could hide it, but I'd rather lean into it because it means I can be me without having to say, oh, please don't ask about that. Please don't ask about these
I
things.
understand. Although when you it's still a part of your brand, the fact that you can't earn a living with it anymore, that doesn't take away the fact that that is your experience, that is your background. So,
Definitely.
okay. So, can you then take us through your definition of success, and has it changed over the years?
Ironically, it hasn't changed, but what it looks like has changed, right? When I was 23, waking up and seeing my daughter smile was not success because there was no daughter. So very simple. When I was 28, making money was not something I worried about or something I bothered about. I definitely didn't see it as successful when somebody paid me 10,000 to do something. A, they didn't, and B, I didn't care at that time. Now it's really nice because it helped me move the debt. But my basic definition of success is that you have more days that you wake up smiling than days where you don't. And a lot of that for me has been to have an impact, to do something that I felt mattered and have people come to me and say, Klaus, what you did mattered. It made a change for me and thank you for that. That's always been my definition of success. And I've been lucky enough to have that, whether it's been in nonprofits or it's been in professional life or it's been in friendships. I've been lucky enough to have a lot of that. But also, because that's a very goody two shoes answer, but also to not have to worry, right? Not have to worry about where rent is coming from, not have to worry about is there toilet paper enough? Can I walk? Do I have my health? Is my daughter sick or are my parents happy? Or all these sorts of lack of worry has been one of my major definitions of success. And I wouldn't say I've been super successful on all fronts there. For example, I do have huge money worries because of that crash still. But in many ways, I've been blessed enough that I've been successful, that there are many things I haven't had to worry about and I don't. I've never had to deal with not liking my job. I've never had to deal with abusive relationships. I've never had to deal with living in a country where healthcare wasn't free. All these sorts of things where you don't notice it when it's good, but you definitely notice it when it's bad.
Yeah, I want to come to that because when you say, okay, I don't worry that I don't have anything, but you're referring to the basics because this is not about, oh, I don't have to worry if my yacht's big enough.
No, exactly. And I think that to me has been a, I'm lucky enough that I've been born in a, as a rich white man, now middle class, but in a super rich society, globally speaking. So a lot of things that a lot of people in the world have to worry about, I haven't had to. I've had running water. I've had a refrigerator from I was very little. A lot of people don't. But I've been lucky enough to pretty quickly understand that I was lucky, which meant that I never thought, oh, I'm poor because I don't have a yacht. My yacht isn't big enough. Instead, I've thought, oh, I'm rich because I have a toilet. And that has not necessarily solved all my problems. It really hasn't, but it has made it much easier to put in perspective when things were bad. So when I say I ended up crashing my company that I spent a lifetime or a professional lifetime building, and ended up in about €1 million personal debt. Yes, that was bad. Yes, I don't wish that upon anyone. It's not as much fun as it sounds, but I still had a toilet. I still had running water. I still had a refrigerator. I still had people who loved me. I could still walk. And always remembering that when things are bad has been, for me, extremely empowering as a human being and also useful for dealing with other people, right?
Okay. Now, Klaus, I know you speak all over the world and consult all over the world. Maybe this question is an open door, or the answer is, but if you go to the States, if you've been, went bankrupt, it's almost like a badge of honor. It proves, hey, you have an entrepreneurial spirit. Don't care. You pick up the pieces and move forward, and you'll be successful next time. Does that also do you experience the same emotion reactions in Denmark or other countries?
No. In the US, when I talk about crashing and burning and building the world's largest and ending up in it going wrong in flames and now crawling out of that, people stand up and clap. In Denmark, they say, oh, it's impressive that you're actually now earning money, but why were you such an idiot? No, it's surreal the difference that I have friends, plenty of old friends in Denmark who have seen me crash and have said, oh, that's not nice, and then have seen me start to rise again. And then when I've said, hey, I've paid off €400,000 of that debt in the last couple of years, but I still have cash flow issues. Can you spare €500 for 2 weeks? Oh, no, I can't because you crashed, so you're not trustworthy. And I say, dude, I earned five times as much as I did before. I didn't know what I was doing then, but I do now. It's still just a tough situation. But the reaction is, oh no, you're tainted because you crashed. Where in the US, it's like, oh, you crashed and you're rising again? How can we help you? It's very, very different mindsets.
Okay. As promised, I wanted to come back. I mean, this is great stuff, by the way, Klaus. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Now, you were known as the king of the Danish LARP. It was a term I was not familiar with. I'll confess I had to look it up. It's the live action role playing. So I'm assuming with the role playing factory, you produced LARPing sessions.
So the Role Playing Factory, and this is where it gets complicated. The Role Playing Factory is a nonprofit organization that I was one of the founders of in 2005. It still exists. I'm just not involved in it actively anymore, but I was the chairman of that for 16 years. It's the biggest organization of its type in Denmark, the most influential in the country, blah, 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 done amazing things. Thousands and thousands and thousands of kids gone through and youngsters, all the good stuff. On the side of that, besides that, so I did that as a volunteer for fun. Besides that, I had the Role Playing Academy, my company, which me and a friend owned together. And we did role playing events for schools, for libraries, for banks as a way of either entertainment or education. So using it as a method to accomplish something else, skill training via pretending to be pirates, for example. And then I did the art stuff, the hobby stuff on the side. But all that combined made me a pretty influential figure in that very small space. So the global live action role play world is very small, but in that small world, I was one of the pioneers and leaders.
Is there a difference between, or an attitude, or anything between role playing, LARPing, or dressing up and going to a Comic Con?
There is, whenever you encounter subcultures, there are huge differences within the subcultures. Just like if you ask somebody who knows nothing about space movies and say, oh, Star Trek and Star Wars, that's basically the same, right? Many people might say, sure, it seems like the same. But once you ask the Star Wars people, they're like, they will kill you if you say it's Star Trek and vice versa. So within the role playing spaces, the difference between the live action role players, the tabletop role players, the costume players, the people who just do the dress up parties, there's overlap, but there's these fierce territorial battles. Because when there's no money on the line, in a lot of these places, there's very little money and nobody's getting paid, then there's only status and trust and artistic expression. And that means you fight fiercely for your small corner of whatever it is. And it's the same thing you see with stamp collectors or with people who do abstract painting or music genres, right? No, we're not grunge punk, we're crust core or whatever it is, that things get tricky. And from the outside it's Europe. From the inside, there's no Europe. There's Bulgaria, there's the Netherlands. And even in the Netherlands, you're like, no, there's Friesland.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
It's exactly right. So the closer you get to a thing, the more you see the nuances. And since I was very close to it, I could talk to you for hours about the nuances within a tiny space that most of the world doesn't know about, doesn't care about, and sees as, oh, you're all the same.
Okay. Like that. Now, I want to see if can we tie, do you tie your background in LARPing and role playing to your current work of advising on innovation culture?
Yes, a lot. I do it both because I use it as part of my story. Whenever I talk about my story, I talk about this is what I used to do. Here's the crash. Now I'm doing this. And the reason is that role playing is, and I'll say this to anyone out there listening, role playing, while a little bit esoteric, is one of the best training tools in the world for learning how to design experiences for human beings. Because if you're doing a movie, you only control what's on the screen. Right? You don't control the sofa I'm watching it from. You don't control the bathroom facilities at home. You don't control what food I'm eating. Even those have an effect on it. With the role playing, especially a live one where you're using your body and pretending to be the character, you control everything. You control the story. You control the dramatic rules. You control the costumes. You control everything. And it turns out that whether you go to 10 people and say, guys, you're now going to be orcs, and orcs vote on everything. Orcs have democracy. They call it orcocracy. And it means orcs vote. Or you go to a startup and say, guys, we're now going to do this flat basis democracy voting on everything. So you vote on everything. Everybody's now a partner. Those are the same things. And it means that a lot of the stuff that I did in role-playing events, I could translate that once I'd learned how, I could translate that more or less one-to-one to my work with culture, and especially with innovation culture. So some of the tricks that I've used to make interesting events about 1914 or the Roman Empire, I can use exactly the same tricks to do something about culture at a workplace.
Okay. I'm now triggered to share something with you. I picked up a couple of years ago, and so wondering your take on that. I came across an acronym, American acronym called HALE. I don't know if you ever heard that. And HALE stands for honesty, authenticity, integrity, and love. It's like a mindset to, you can have to work with people. Just be authentic, be yourself, love what you do. And I think these are worthy benefits is a worthy way to approach work and life in general.
Yeah, I would agree 100%. And then I'd add the twist and say, if I'm going to put it into this context, and say, one of the best ways to learn about yourself is by trying to be somebody else. And what role playing is extremely strong at is letting you be somebody else for a while. And once you've been 20 other people, once you've been the pirate captain and the Roman slave and the lawyer struggling with his boss, then you realize that the person you are in your everyday life, that's role number 21. And once you realize you could take parts of the pirate captain and you could put them into your real life, or you could take parts of yourself and put into the pirate captain, and suddenly identity starts becoming much more fluid, but also much more authentic, because you don't have to choose between, do I want to be middle class businessman, then I can't listen to Metallica, or do I want to be hippie businessman, then I must listen to Metallica. Where here you realize you can construct your identity out of many different parts, and getting to test them out is a really nice way of doing that.
And that's actually interesting because I made the assumption that because you are into role playing, you pick up a facade so you don't show the real you. But your argument is actually by being able to experiment something, you can actually take that on board and make it part of your own personality at least, and don't hide it anymore.
I think I'd say I had the skill of putting on a facade and not being me. I'm very good at that. But because of the role playing, I'm also rather good at knowing myself. And it means that some of my darker sides I'm a bit more in contact with than most people, because I've tried them out and found out, okay, I like that. I like being in the spotlight. Okay, that's not necessarily an attribute that everyone thinks is good. Some people think that that makes me like the guy who wants to steal the stage, and I realize, well, that's true. But on the plus side, it means that I'm never afraid of being on the stage. So I've tried to construct a life where people actually ask me to be on the stage, and suddenly what is a little bit of a dark side, look at me, becomes also a strength and something that other people are thankful for. And part of that is because I've gotten to experiment with a lot of different identities. Because you get to, when you, again, when you, if you play a beggar for 3 days, and you're not allowed to speak, and you're not allowed to look anyone in the eyes, you'll probably come home and realize it's rather nice that I can speak normally. It's rather nice I can look some, but oh, how nice it was that nobody ever asked for my opinion. Oh, how refreshing that was. And then you try to work a little bit of that into your life, like if you like it, or if you find out, oh, here is something I want to change about myself. And then you say, okay, how can I experiment with not having that? So it gives you a chance to experiment with identity. And the more you experiment with identity, this is what we do when we're teenagers, the better you get at finding out who you really are. People who don't experiment with identity, well, maybe they're lucky and find out who they are anyway, but a lot of them end up having these, oh, then I was 46 and I found out that I'm a homosexual, or then I was 62 and I found out that I never really liked finance, or I didn't want to be a doctor, or maybe I want to live in Panama. So getting to experiment, getting to dip your toes into different identities is a very, very powerful way of figuring out who you are.
Okay, so advice to the world: pick up LARPing, pick up role
Yes,
playing,
yes.
and figure out who you are. Where do you draw your inspiration from? Are there people? Are there movies? What's the your what are your sources?
Oh, trains. It's a fun, true but not encompassing answer. But I draw part of my inspiration, I draw from the world. And that seems extremely grandiose. But what it means is that I spend a lot of time, an hour a day, probably more, on learning new stuff. And whether it's here's a walkthrough of the economic aspects of the First Punic War between Rome and Carthage, or this is how the Russian railway system developed in the 1870s, or why are we all talking about the oil in Niger right now, and what's wrong with these Iranian half public, half nonprofit organizations that are a problem for their economy, right? So I tend to be curious about things, and the more I'm curious about, the more I find ways where I can take that random stuff I learn and implement it somewhere. Because it turns out that when you're going somewhere and then you say, oh, you know what? This thing, this situation you have here is exactly like these Iranian institutions that are somewhere between a nonprofit and a charity, but are tax exempt, and yet they run businesses, so they have an unfair advantage. And then people say, I'd never heard of those, but yeah, it sounds like that's exactly the same thing. What can we do about that? Oh, well, but they do this and this and this. Because the more you know that the people you're talking with don't know about a certain thing, the more it's easy to say, You don't have to do something new. You just have to look at what they're doing. And that is to me, the world is fascinating. It's full of fascinating people. It's full of fascinating subjects. But what to me as an innovation person is even more fascinating is seeing that what somebody has been struggling with for 20 years, other people solved 20 years ago, but they just don't meet. And getting them to meet is one of the things I do. And that, of course, also reflects in what I find interesting, that I'm constantly stepping into new worlds, role playing, but also just in what sort of fiction and what sort of media I enjoy, and then finding, oh, there's similarities here. Oh, I could use that. And that means I'll end up giving speeches like, what do Google and the Wehrmacht army pre-World War II have in common? And people will say, what do they have in common? And then it turns out they have a lot of things in common, but you would never know if you didn't look at them. I know that was a little bit of a all over the place answer,
No,
but I hope it gave something.
yeah, I'm still following it. Hey, I got two more questions. We're running out of time, unfortunately. But Klaus, first of all, you said, okay, I used to be known as, let's say, the king of the Danish LARP. Is how would you like the world to remember you if you look at yourself today?
As somebody who makes the world more playful, that's what gets me up in the morning. Getting to make the world a bit more playful, a bit less fearful, a bit more, let's try it out. And again, taps into one of the main things I do with my work is try to get people to go from a, could this work? And let's discuss it to how can we find out how it works and test it. And part of that is by being playful, by taking chances, by saying, let's give it a try. Because the more we do that, the more, in my experience, we're happier as human beings and we do good things for both ourselves and the planet. So that's how I'd like to be remembered.
If I remember correctly, being a Homo Ludens.
Yes.
Final question, and maybe you've already answered that, but what advice would you give young people out there listening to this? How would you help? How are they going to help advance their career and their life by?
I give it by quoting one of Oprah Winfrey's producers. And she was asked by a guy who knew her personally and said, how do I get on the Oprah Winfrey show? And he said, you need to be a caricature of a human being. And what he meant wasn't you need to be silly. He said, you need to be 120% yourself. There are two reasons for that. One is that if you're 120% yourself, you're pretty hard to copy. Right? You're whatever you are, you're going to be pretty unique. And either people will want that or they won't want that. And it's just as good finding the people who don't want that as the ones who do. So find out who you are and what you want to be, and then just dial it up to 11. That's number one, because it's easier to be remembered. It's easier for people to say, I want to work with them or I don't want to. Number two is that pretending to be other people all the time is exhausting. To pretending to be somebody else for a weekend or for an hour, that's fun. Pretending to be somebody else all the time, that's stress and depression. That's where they come from. So be yourself, because it's exhausting to be somebody else, but don't be yourself in kind of a watered down way. Be yourself in an over the top way, because then you'll draw the people to you who think you're interesting, and the people who don't, then you're going to push them away, but you're going to do it faster. The problem in business isn't a no. Or a yes, though a yes is nicer. The problem is a maybe. And the more you're yourself, the easier it is for people to say, yes, I want that, or no. I have plenty of people who would never work with me, and that's fine, as long as there are enough who do.
Klaus Rastad, great advice, great talk. I'm sorry the time is over. We're going to meet up soon. And
Yes.
for now, I want to thank you so much for sharing your thoughts, experience with the brand called You. Thank you.
Thank you, friends.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for the brand called You.